You are listening to KGVM 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio and streaming at kgvm.org. Gallatin Valley and online listeners, you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm your host, Roxana. This week, we have an hour of Desert Oracle Radio from Ken Lane. Released on June 5th, 2020, here is Cult Leaders and Campfire.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
No, there's nothing that adds to the natural outdoor feel of a campfire under the open skies and under a almost half moon, like some recorded campfire noises to kind of sweeten it. Now, I'll tell you this, but you're going to forget it. And about 10 minutes later, you're going to start looking around. Because there will be sounds that aren't from here. You see that wall of mountains behind us? Filled with monsters. Is this loud enough for everybody? Do you need a little more? Good? Good. See what I mean? I'm Ken Lane. I'm from Desert Oracle. Every month or so, thank you, they let me come down from Joshua Tree to visit civilization. Right here. They don't let me go indoors. So they've kind of sequestered this area off here, and here it is safe to tell campfire stories. We've got a campfire. We've got boulders. We're in the desert. And unlike last week, we are not rained out. We got rained out last week. That was the weather's way of saying it was overly ambitious to do a campfire stories the day after Christmas and the day after New Year's Day. So this is better. This is more symbolic. I've had a lot of people saying Happy New Year. And this is the first time I've had the sense that they were all being ironic. So let's try to, we don't mind a little irony, but hopefully on this second day when the pressure is off a bit, we can say Happy New Year with a little more sincerity. Maybe reduced expectations. There's always that mid-January thing. It didn't do it. I didn't finish my degree. I didn't sign up for the gym. I didn't do this. It's all right. You can do it next year. Decade differences are very hard on any kind of resolution, because there's this immense pressure of the new decade. In 2021, nobody will care. Excuse me for a moment while I adjust the soundtrack. It turns out there's no rain tonight. So. Well, thank you all for coming. So I spoke with some of you before we started here tonight. And I know there are people from all over the states. We have some people from Canada, I believe. And the Desert Southwest is well represented. You know, we have some people from West Texas, from New Mexico, from Utah, from Arizona, from the Mojave, of course. And from the Sonoran Desert. We are in the Sonoran Desert. Now, usually, if you talk to desert people, the kind of people who have wildflower and bird books in their Subaru, I'm not judging. I like those people. But usually they'll say it's the Colorado Desert. And some people who have lived here in Palm Springs, Palm Desert, La Quinta, Cathedral, Desert Hot Springs, have wondered over the years, why would you call it the Colorado Desert? It's because it's the part of the Sonoran Desert that's west of the Colorado River. So from the Colorado River, the state line of both Nevada and Arizona, to the mountains here, the mountains that stop the occasional Pacific storms from bringing too much moisture into this area. Although we've had a little bit. We had a white Christmas in Joshua Tree. I hope you got up there to see that. There's still some snow in the mountains. I went into the park to take a walk yesterday, a New Year's walk. And I saw people driving out. It was coming up on sundown. You know how you see people coming out of the mountains or the ski resorts and they piled up some snow on top of their two-wheel drive SUV to show that they've been somewhere? People were doing that out of Joshua Tree, out of the west entrance, but it was mostly sand. So you saw this kind of reddish, golden sand kind of turning into mud dripping down the sides and a little bit of dirty snow up top. Now, whether you are a vegan, vegetarian, lactose intolerant, the truth is that the Southwest, over the last half millennium, was in large part settled and run by cattle ranchers. It is the reason why the old Mexican ranchos in California were of such value after the missions were secularized and shut down and handed off in the early 1800s. Don't even want a microphone, but if you've been to Yosemite or Death Valley or Yellowstone, and if you've gone to ranger talks around the campfire, there's no choice. There's too many people. You need some kind of amplification. And because it's Desert Oracle, you also need spooky music. Just a little bit. You don't want too much. So the Southwest was in large part settled by cattle ranchers. Initially Spanish and Mexican and mestizo cattle ranchers, and eventually African Americans and Anglo-Americans and Russians and all kinds of people who wanted a little more space, who wanted to kind of get away from the hustle and the bustle and maybe the law. So you could come out here and you could put some cattle down on some land, and the cattle would eat off the range cattle. And there were negative effects on the landscape after a couple of hundred years of this. A lot of the places that we now think of as barren desert used to be desert grassland. Southern Arizona, southern New Mexico, northern Chihuahua, a lot of West Texas. But the stock animals kind of ate up all that grassland, and then they just go for whatever's there. They'll eat mesquite tree, creosote, a tire, whatever's around. And you get erosion and more flash floods, and then the land can support less cattle. I was touring around Nevada with a friend of mine who works for the Center for Biological Diversity, and he was pointing out some of the places. The cattle did this, the cattle did this. I said, it's not the cattle's fault. They did not choose that. They were placed there, they were bred there, they had to eat, and so they ate. Now, in the 1970s, on rangeland in the Southwest, an interesting thing started to happen. And it usually started like this. It was late at night. The family at the family-run cattle ranch had dinner, kind of closing things down for the night, shutting gates, turning off outdoor lights, saving electricity, giving a hoot. And then someone would see something out beyond the residence, beyond the main ranch house. And what they saw was fairly consistent. It would be a kind of pulsing, strobing light that appeared to be at ground level or just above it. And there would be sort of a haze, like a fog around these lights, even if it was a clear southwestern night. And in the morning, the ranchers, the ranch hands, whoever was tasked with this task, would go out to this place on land they knew well, that they worked every day, and that's where they would find the mutilated cattle. And by mutilated, I mean dead cattle, mostly bulls. Dead but no visible wounds. Dead but no blood on the ground. Dead and missing certain parts, certain tender parts. Ears, tongues, udders, sex organs. As if they were cut with a laser knife, as if they were removed without any visible wound. Sometimes the cows looked like they had been dropped. And once the numbers of these incidents started to pile up, the large animal vets who would come out and examine these carcasses would find some strange things in autopsy. What they would find is the bones were often broken in the legs after the cattle had been dropped some distance above the ground. This started, or at least the modern era of it, started in the 1950s. By the mid-1970s, it had reached crisis proportions. Now, a bull, a breeding bull in the cattle industry, can be worth something from $5,000 to $15,000 to even $20,000, depending on the type of bull. And whatever it is that was taking these cattle, it had a particular taste for the bulls. Now, if you've ever been to a remote cattle ranch, say like up in Landfair, Mojave National Preserve, there are still some cattle ranches there. Beautiful places. And the preserve, like in some of our public lands, there are still limited numbers of grazing permits that are put out. And you'll be driving a dirt road, going into some unexplored canyon or another, and you'll see some big, kind of comical longhorn cattle standing around, looking at your rental Jeep. And when you're out there at night, you don't see anything else. The only lights in the sky you see will be the moon, the stars, the planets in the evening. Now maybe you can go outside and look up high and watch the International Space Station go by, or some high altitude jet traffic between Vegas and LAX. But you're pretty much on your own out there. And it can get a little unnerving when you see strange flashing, strobing red and white lights on your ranch, but just far enough away that you're not going to get up, get dressed, get in your truck, and drive out there and try to find it. Especially when you've heard the stories that if you try, they're gone before you ever get there. The lights, the fog. Since the mid-70s, there have been tens of thousands of mutilated cattle cases in the southwestern United States. It's not only the southwestern United States. They happen in cattle country and sheep country in Australia, in the grasslands of Africa that are worked as ranches, in Asia, in the cattle country of Argentina. But maybe because we have so much media here, maybe because we have so many local TV stations, and we used to have a lot of local newspapers, it seemed to spread around a little bit more, the news, as something weird was going on the ranches of the southwestern United States. So in 1976, it went to the congressional delegation in Washington from Colorado. Colorado had sustained the heaviest losses in South, Southeastern, and Eastern Colorado. And so federal law enforcement, state law enforcement, the Highway Patrol, the county farm bureaus all came together for the largest manhunt in Colorado history. And the weird thing is, in areas where there had been a lot of cattle attacks, a lot of strangely murdered cattle, they set up roadblocks. The local ranchers got together in militias. And in a few cases, down near the southern border with New Mexico, specifically Haunted Land, if you know the area, especially weird cattle mutilations would happen inside roadblocks, inside the dragnet. Like whatever it was teasing the law enforcement. Despite the biggest dragnet in Colorado state history, to this day, never a suspect, never an arrest, never any evidence linking any of the crimes to the work of people. Except in one especially sinister and weird case, when, after the Colorado Attorney General announced at a press conference that there had been no evidence specifically of humans doing the mutilations, of tools, of anything that would show that somebody had done this, on the very next discovered cattle mutilation, dropped there, no prints, no footprints, no tire tracks, no nothing. A cheap scalpel. A cheap medical supply scalpel, just sitting there. Over time, the people who heard the stories, who were spooked by the tales, who saw the news reports, who saw the newspaper reports and the Denver Post, forgot about it because there were other things going on in the 70s. The ranchers did not forget. The cattle industry did not forget. But it dropped off the front pages of the major newspapers. It dropped off the evening news. And now I guess there is no evening news. If there is, I haven't heard about it in a while. Does anybody go home at 6 o'clock to watch the evening news? That used to be the greatest journalism job in America. Now nobody even knows who does it. The anchors from all three TV networks, assuming they're still around, could be here. And we'd never know. It's like being in charge of the horses that used to bring the ice around after Frigidaire came around. Unmourned, unremembered. But the mutilations continued. They continued into the 80s, they continued into the 90s, and then they kind of dropped off. Late 90s, early 2000s. And you might think, well, what kind of people would keep track of that if they're not in the cattle industry? Well, there's a few of us. Not too many. But thankfully, a few of us keep tabs on the situation. I got interested in it when I was an agriculture reporter for a newspaper in rural California many decades ago. And I thought, well, this is a little more interesting than the Farm Bureau meeting. What's happening here? And if you know cattle ranchers, it doesn't matter what part of the world you're in, cattle ranchers by nature are just kind of quiet. They're not prone to wild stories. In fact, one of the weirdest cattle mutilation stories in recent decades came from a kind of oddball ranching family that decided to go public with what was going on their Black Angus breeding farm that they had up in northeastern Utah, on the other side of the mountains from Salt Lake City. It's not the Utah we usually know if we're not from there. It's not the city and suburbs and sprawl and temple of Salt Lake. It's not all the beautiful national parks of southern Utah, Canyonlands, Arches, Zion, Bryce. It's mostly Native American reservation and BLM grazing land. A family moved there from northwestern New Mexico near Dulce. They had Black Angus breeding bulls. That was their business. So some people are in the business of having cattle everywhere, feed on the brush and the grass, and clog up the freshwater streams and get hit by semi-trucks and all the charming things cattle do. And then there are some people who drive around with a truck with prize bulls. And you can see me carefully scanning to see if the children are still here. I think the children can deal with this. Cattle have mommy and daddies. But daddy isn't always around, kind of like with people. In fact, daddy is often only there for about 10 minutes. And then he's put in the truck and taken to another ranch. This family was called the Sherman family. Now, I have people who have been working on this story, friends of mine, colleagues, comrades, and they always say, oh, don't say the Sherman family. It was in the newspaper as their name. They went public. They went to the Deseret paper and they went to the Salt Lake City Tribune. And they told their story because it was extremely weird. They bought a ranch of about 540 acres. It sounds like a lot of land if you're like in Echo Park on a 200 square foot lot. But it's not big for a cattle ranch. The big cattle ranchos, the original ranchos after the missions were secularized by the Mexican government, the California missions, and then handed out as prizes to generals and colonels and etc. Those would be in the tens of thousands of acres. Huge ranches, ranches where you could live your whole life and never see every part of it. So this was a fairly small ranch. They bought it, and the story, which George Knapp, the Las Vegas television reporter and writer on strange topics, covered in a book he wrote about this place, was published in the early 2000s. These people had a little trouble in New Mexico. And if you know New Mexico, you got to be pretty weird to have a little trouble in New Mexico. Because people will kind of let you do what you want, as long as it does not infringe on the lifestyle of the others. Well, they were kind of run out of town, which is kind of weird. They were run out of town. They moved up and bought on a mortgage this small ranch up in northeastern Utah. This scrubby, cold country. It's grim in winter. It's beautiful if you like that extreme high desert kind of thing. Juniper and pinyon and everything's frozen for 4 months of the year. And out here, we get very excited if it snows for a few minutes, because it's something to see. So they went up there and they brought their prize Angus cattle, moved into this old homestead house. There were a couple other cabins for ranch hands on the property. Again, not that big. Mostly just some pasture, some creeks, not rivers really, just little creeks, a little bit of fresh water, and then a wall of mountains. The Indian reservation on the other side. They got there on their first day, the whole family, and they immediately began to have problems. They were getting the bulls out of these trailers and kind of introducing them to the area. So they put up some temporary metal fencing around. And they had some calves too. The calves were over on the side. And everybody worked on the ranch, the kids too. So, you know, get this, close that, do this. So they're just kind of doing the busy work of figuring out where things go, what's going to happen. And they see something coming across the pasture. It was a black dog. As it approaches, they realize it's about as tall at the head as the kids who were in middle school at the time. And instead of doing the kind of normal cowboy thing, which is start shooting, they were entranced. And the dog kind of came right up to them. And as it did, they realized it did not look like a dog. What it looked like was an immense black timber wolf. Ears straight up, that big mane over the shoulders. But it was friendly. It padded right up to them, and the next thing they knew, and when questioned later, they were all a little confused about this because it went against the regular way that you would deal with a threat, a potential predator. Remember, cattle ranchers pretty much exterminated all the American wolves in less than 100 years. It's kind of a shoot first, think about it later kind of thing. But they did not. And it wasn't because they were members of Greenpeace or anything. They were just entranced. And all of a sudden, they realized this immense, monstrous black wolf is standing between them. They're standing around like this, and it's right between them. And they're petting it. The kids are petting it. Kind of talking about it. I wonder who owns this wolf dog. It must be a pet. Obviously tame. And once they were all off guard, it trotted over to the metal pipe fencing right over here where the calves were. And there was a calf right there. And the calf, as cattle will often do, they're curious creatures, had its head out between the bars and was looking at the people. What are you doing? Well, the giant black wolf trotted over and clamped its jaws on the calf's head. And the calf began wailing. And the adults began freaking out. The kids were crying. Finally, the instinct of the rancher snaps back into the brain. he runs over to his pickup, and he's got a big revolver, and he's got a rifle up on the rack, but he gets the big revolver because the thing's right there. And he goes over to it, and he hits it with the butt of the handgun, the big black wolf, and it doesn't do anything. So he shoots it in the head, and it looks over at him with a kind of angry look, and then turns its head back to the calf, who was bawling, crying. He then pushes the muzzle right up against the big black wolf's neck and shoots again, and sees a chunk of hair and flesh shoot up. Again, it looks at him, and then calmly, casually, releases the calf and meanders back into the pasture, where it disappears. That was day one. Over the next several months, they would find a number of bizarre things. On one occasion, about 3 weeks after this first one, a bunch of bulls that are fenced and ready to be put in the trailer to take out for breeding vanish. They're not there. It's daytime. They're in there. He goes back in the house, gets his coffee, whatever, says goodbye, comes out, they're not there. Now it's 500 plus acres. They're looking everywhere. They call the sheriff. And it's cattle rustling. Big crime in cattle country. Nothing. No evidence. No tire tracks coming up to the gate. Nothing. At the end of the day, when they've looked everywhere, there's an unused trailer on the other side that's locked shut. They take a peek in there, and all the bulls are smashed in there. Alive. Locked on the outside. It happened in minutes. Now, along with a lot of other weird stuff, lights in the sky, people seemingly walking onto the property even though all the gates from the road are locked, they went public. Because a newspaper reporter in Salt Lake was doing a story on weird things in this basin. Legends, rumors, tall tales, unsolved crimes, that kind of thing. Kind of thing you do for Halloween if you're a reporter. A billionaire in Las Vegas named Robert Bigelow saw the newspaper story and offered to buy the ranch, sight unseen. So he did. As escrow was going through, the billionaire studies the paranormal. We'll get to him later. He also builds space habitats for NASA now. We'll get to that later. By the end of this family's stay, they would no longer stay in their individual bedrooms in the ranch house. Disturbingly, the children had found the closets locked from the inside. Their last night, they were all on a single king mattress in the kitchen with the lights on because nobody else could sleep anywhere else. And I don't remember who the first one who woke up was, but when they woke up, there was blood all over the sheets. And it turned out that every one of them had a little cut, a scoop out of their thumb. Minor. Something that you could take care of with gauze and a couple of band-aids. It was like one little goodbye. So the ranch over time, due to Native American legends in the place, became known as Skinwalker Ranch. My friend Jeremy Corbell made a movie about it, a documentary. It was very creepy. As usual with this stuff, it's very hard to come up with any evidence or any story that kind of puts it to rest. But all of that kind of came to an end. At least the attention came to an end. I think it has something to do with the lack of small town newspapers now. There used to be a small town newspaper or two in every little ranch and community. Eastern Oregon, Eastern Washington, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. They all had little papers that were supported by advertising from the local stores, the local chemist, the barbershop, the restaurant. Then all those places went and all got replaced with a Walmart in each town, and then the advertising dried up and all the newspapers went under, and then the internet came along and everybody thought, oh, we'll get all the news we want from the internet. We didn't know it'd all be the same news for all of us. And so the stories kind of went away. The stories not just of bizarre things like that, but the stories of what happens to fourth generation ranchers when they can't afford to be on the land anymore. What happens to people when they can't stay in their family home because they can't even make the property tax payments. And so these stories tapered off. Until May of 2019, when they all started coming back. And if you listen to NPR or some of the cable news stations, you might have heard in July, the first one of these in a long time to go national. It was in Eastern Oregon. That's desert up there. A ranch that had been bought from the ranching family by a local large animal veterinarian. Couple of offices, and so he bought this place. Over a 48-hour period at the end of July of last year, they found five bulls. The bulls were all within a quarter mile of one another. They were kind of spaced out, like chess pieces. Again, no blood, no visible wounds, no cause of death that has been agreed upon so far. Half a year later. These bulls cost on average about $7,000 a piece, and they were all in the prime of their life, for the breeders anyway. They all had about 5+ years to go as breeding bulls. These were all found in some public land grazing area against the national forest there. And as of today, because I checked this morning, I thought, boy, that'd ruin the story if it had been solved. Somebody be out here on their phone. No cause of death has been established by Oregon law enforcement. They don't even know what killed them. Each one was missing some tender part. Not chewed out by a predator, but as if it had been cut out with a lightsaber. Which are not real, I don't think. So I've been wondering, and we've spent a lot of time over the past 70 years trying to figure out who was doing it. And I'll tell you some of the conspiracies if you haven't heard them. One is that it's a secret government program, apparently to terrorize United States cattle ranchers. And that they fly in with stealth helicopters thousands and thousands of times in remote, rugged, nighttime conditions, specifically for the purpose of killing and mutilating livestock. They leave no tracks, they leave no prints. And even though regular military and commercial helicopters crash in daylight pretty regularly, probably about one a month somewhere, one goes into the river in New York, a Marine helicopter goes into the mountain up in 29 Palms. These stealth terror helicopters have never crashed, never been seen, never been photographed, never been identified, never been tracked on radar. So that's one. Anybody like to go outside at night and look up to see if there's any UFOs? That's kind of my main social activity. Just me and them, you know? And if you do that a lot, and you like looking at the night sky, you like the stars, the constellations, there's these little things you can get on your phone, Starwalk and some other things, and you can track what it is. Like, what is that? That's a communication satellite. What company owns that? Well, it's such and such, Iridium or something. There's the ISS. There's some humans there. Then you go check Twitter to see if they tweeted, you know. Which they often do. They don't have much to do. We don't have that excuse. And then there are live flight trackers, which are my favorites. They're free, they're on a web browser, they're on your phone, on your iPad, your tablet, whatever it is. You go to one of these things like Flight Radar 24, Flight Trackers, all these different things. They're using public data. But the public data is public. We can use it, we can look at it. And you can look up and see, oh yeah, it's a 1034 from Atlanta coming into Riverside. And so if you like to look up at the sky and see if there are any weird things up there, you can use this stuff, and it ends a lot of dumb discussions with your housemates or spouses or neighbors or whatever. Yeah, I saw something really bad. It's probably a plane. So, well, if it was a plane, it was unidentified by FAA radar, no tail number, no departure city, no arrival city. Plus, it was a big black silent triangle and disappeared. There were other excuses, other theories about who was responsible for the cattle mutilations. One thing I always found weird is that we were never suspected, the people who actually send cattle to slaughterhouses and eat them. Because that's allowed. But until that point, they're considered property, and they're valuable property, and people's livelihoods and homes and farms and their kids' school and whatever all depend on it. Plus the hamburgers. So we were clear because the animals were wasted. So it came up, because it was the 1970s, the years after the Manson murders, the years after serial killers, the years after the occult revival, the satanic Bible, all of that. Some of these cops out in this or that county started thinking, maybe it's Satanist. Maybe through some bizarre misinterpretation of the Satanic Bible, which was a lifestyle guide written by a guy in San Francisco who took on the pen name Anton LaVey. He shaved his head, he had a goatee, and he played the organ at the movie theater, the Fox movie theater in San Francisco. When the Fox movie theater closed in San Francisco, it was going to be torn down and replaced with an apartment building. He cursed it. Fox Plaza. That place was literally cursed. It was only in the recent kind of dot-com real estate hysteria that anyone has agreed to live in that place, because it's very ugly. And it's this windswept concrete plaza filled with garbage and penny savers swirling around, cigarette butts. So Sammy Davis Jr., often a resident of Palm Springs, this area here, he joined the Church of Satan. The rumor was Ann Margaret was going to join too. So it was kind of cool for a while. The cool thing to do, and the whole Sinatra music and everything. So you could just do the same thing, but say you were Church of Satan. That's what Sammy did for a little while. They weren't flying in by the thousands in stealth helicopters and mutilating livestock. Now and then you'll hear about, oh, we found evidence of a satanic cult somewhere. You hear about this at San Diego, Sacramento. And then you see what the news is, and well, we went out to this area and we found some strange kind of stuff, burnt and kind of broken. Bongs. And we found sinister graffiti on the walls. Slayer, Iron Maiden, Ozzy. It's kids, it's rock and roll. Even if they wanted to, these aren't the people who are going to be in stealth helicopters with laser surgical devices. No suspects. Again, no one's ever been arrested for a cattle mutilation. Tens of thousands of them. So it seems like there's something to it. And I was doing a radio show a couple of weeks ago about some of this stuff. There's a Desert Oracle radio show, by the way. It's on the Joshua Tree radio station, about five other stations in the West. But that's too hard. It's on your phone. All you have to do is tell your phone, subscribe to Desert Oracle Radio. And it'll do it. It'll send all your private information that you've been saying for the last several years somewhere. But it will also sign you up for the Desert Oracle podcast. So I'm working on this thing, and I thought, well, I've been kind of knocking the story around since I was an agriculture reporter long ago. And is this going to be one of those things like UFOs where there's just never an answer? Just a bunch of strange news reports and, you know, some nerds arguing on Reddit or whatever? And I thought, well, what's happening here? And what could the message be? And then I was reading the Bible to my kids on Halloween. I try to get them, you know, to read the stuff that some of our culture is based on, a little Shakespeare now and then, some Old Testament or something. Makes everything better when you know the references, you know, in a Bob Dylan song or something. In a Jay-Z song. So what's he talking about? It's in the Bible. So I was reading the story of Abraham being told by this new God that had appeared and led this kind of small band of people from Mesopotamia. This more pleasant land with some rivers on the sea and Mediterranean. And I was reading about how the expectation when he was building his altar of rocks is that he was, in thanks, going to sacrifice this prime goat. I think it was a goat. To the God that had led him to this new place. When there was room for everybody. For a while. And then, to quote Bob Dylan from the song Highway 61 Revisited, it says, God says to Abraham, kill me a son, his son. He didn't want the animal. He wanted his firstborn. And Abe says, man, you must be putting me on, etc. And that was in my mind for the next couple of days as I was still going over this cattle mutilation story. And I thought, boy, for all of human civilization until the last couple of hundred years, we were constantly taking some kind of good livestock and sacrificing it to our regional or national god. Now the Druids and the Anglo-Saxons, sometimes they do a person, hang them up in the oak groves. But mostly it was livestock. And then we quit doing it. And then somewhere around the early 1950s, we started finding mysteriously sacrificed livestock all over. Sheep in New Zealand, Australia, cattle in the Southwest. And I thought, maybe something up there is trying to tell us something. Something up there, something here, something that comes up now and then. Wants some cattle. So I was thinking of proposing a kind of experiment to Colorado law enforcement since they have all these unsolved cases. But I kind of think they'll call somebody in California and come lock me up. So I just kind of want to plant the idea, what would happen if people started doing some sort of animal sacrifices again? Would the cattle mutilation stop? So I was having this conversation with somebody from the National Park up in Joshua Tree, and she said, well, what if the ghosts or the spirits or whatever just want us to stop growing cattle because of global warming? Because cattle put out emissions about one-third of what engines do. They're kind of engines in a way, with no real pollution control. So we're going to have to wait and see. But if any of you come across any evidence that someone's trying this, like maybe the FBI or base police out at 29 Palms or something, send me an email. Maybe we'll solve this. In the meantime, it's unsolved. There's no way to close the case. And it has cost ranchers and farmers millions and millions of dollars over the years. And the desert Southwest has been ground zero for this particular thing.
Well, that was a campfire story from the beginning of this year. At the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. We'll be back next week with a new episode. thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.